Have you ever had a feeling that something dreadful was about to happen?
This whole premise is sweaty.
Okay, moving right along.
You gonna plagiarize the whole thing for us? Do you have any thoughts of your own on this matter?
Just remember that this thing isn't as black as it appears.
Hold on to your butt.
The only difference between me and a homeless man is his job.
I'm glad you're here to tell us.
I'm looking for the least possible amount of responsibility.
And that ain't bad.
I'm in a glass case of emotion.
Man's got to know his limitations.
I'm glad you came back.
In the bag.
Network.
I drink it up.
All right, welcome to the part two, part deux, if you will.
We're back.
Of the bag pod this week. We're going completely TV now. And we're going to kick it off with perhaps the most famous sci-fi show in the past 10 years.
Of all time, actually.
Okay, of all time, with some Battlestar Galactica. Eugene, huge fan when it was actually being released, when there were new episodes being released.
Real time. Watching it in real time.
There you go. And Jimmy TV, I believe, has finished.
Netflix in it, yeah.
He's been really putting in some work on the Battlestar Galactica. He's made a couple posts.
It lets you know how good of a show it is. This is a busy man.
Yes.
Yeah. I have nothing else. I have so much going on in my life that I'm able to fly through Battlestar Galactica hours at a time. And let me begin by saying, whenever people would mention Battlestar Galactica while it was running, 5 years ago,
yeah,
I always kind of thought they were joking about how good it was. Like, I didn't think anyone ever actually thought it was good. I thought it was all kind of nudge, nudge, wink, wink. This is a sci-fi show.
It seemed like a fanboy thing, where like fanboys are just like, oh, this is the greatest show ever. And you're like, all right.
Yeah, calm really down. Like it, we get it. It's a good quote unquote show. It's a bunny ear, good show, And I actually tried watching it. One of our swim coaches, I guess this was my fourth year in college, liked it a lot. And there were a couple other guys that were home over winter break in Charleston over winter break. And he had the miniseries on DVD. And we actually tried watching the miniseries. And we watched it all. Maybe part of it was just because we were so tired from doing doubles. But, all of us were just so uninterested after the miniseries. That I never continued it until for some reason I rewatched the miniseries, about a month ago and hadn't been able to stop watching it since.
I agree. I mean, I have to say, as someone who watched it in real time, it drove me crazy that nobody would even give it a chance. And to be fair, I felt sci-fi didn't really do that much to help them. I mean, at one point it was on Friday nights. Yeah. And I remember thinking to myself, what could you possibly put on Sci-Fi Tuesday that's going to get you higher ratings than this? So I don't really know what they were thinking. I don't take my word that's 100%. I think at one point it almost got canceled. It was very frustrating at the time to be watching it. I mean, I just have to say to preface it, I think Battlestar Galactica was quite honestly right up there with The Wire. Yeah, I'm crazy in terms of the intelligence of the show. Obviously, it was totally different because it's sci-fi, not realistic. But how it was able to bring in almost all of the contemporary issues of that decade into that context in a skillful way, not beating you over the head with it. So not only was it interesting, but I thought it was also smart, and it really kind of forced you to think if you were paying attention. And it's unfortunate that it flew under the radar.
No, I mean, it definitely is a very thinking series. I mean, right from the get go. With the themes that they're bringing up. One of my favorite parts of the show was, or lasting parts was at the very during the miniseries. Hopefully, I don't really want to get into too much of a recap of the series or anything like that. But during the miniseries, Admiral Adama is kind of gotten this, junk detail to be on Battlestar Galactica on its, maiden voyage or something like that. It's got a gift shop, and, the people are just dicking around. They're just kind of having, a special meeting there or whatever, and he gives a speech about it. And the speech is pretty poignant, and one of the lines is, sooner or later, the day comes when you can't hide from the things that you've done anymore. And that certainly resonates throughout the series with the Cylons continually coming back, and people just being it's not quite racist, but I mean, it's just crazy how short-sighted people are, I guess. But at the same time, you kind of completely understand why? When you know, there are only 20, 40,000 people left in the world and everyone's just freaking out and, you know, mentally completely shot.
Yeah.
Everyone is tortured. Everyone is, you know, does bad things. There's no really great person in it. So, yeah, I mean, it makes for a great television just having all these characters who could really do anything at the drop of a hat. You never really know what the hell's going to happen.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think it brings morality to the forefront of everything. I mean, because, definitely. You know, obviously, when you look, I mean, like, obviously now when people talk about it, everyone's, oh, it was an allegory for the war on terror. Oh, it was an allegory for the war on terror. But the thing is, when you were watching it in real time, since it was in a sci-fi realm, you actually didn't notice that right away. I mean, it wasn't until about three seasons deep that people even really started saying that. And then, you know, but you would find yourself rooting for people doing things that, if, you know, if it was happening in real life right next to you, you'd say, oh, well, that's horrible. And it really kind of forces you to think like, wow, like, well, in what situation is what kind of thing justified? And I mean, it just seemed to touch on everything, not just the war and terror stuff. I mean, one of my most lasting memories of it is when the chief leads that strike on the ship. You know what I mean? It just comes down to like the individual interest versus the collective interest. And, you know, does everyone have the same interest even though they're forced together on these ships? And it really just all these dilemmas, these moral dilemmas were just like at the heart of the episodes. And, you know, you couldn't really tear yourself away from it.
No, definitely. That was an amazing episode. I love that one a lot. I actually like the chief a lot in general.
Love the chief. Love the chief.
But yeah, I mean, because everything the chief said just made perfect sense. You know, why wouldn't they be, the workers be getting, you know, compensated fairly? And the way that the current president, Admiral Adama, were just shooting them down, it was just, you know, so appalling. And I was, I never liked President Roslin to begin with, so I have no qualms, you know.
I feel that.
Calling her out mentally in my head. Adama would kind of go back and forth. But, yeah, I mean – it's just crazy how much how well they can hit on your emotions, I guess, in the show. How well they can bring up things.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the thing about the show too is just like I don't know, like just how much anguish there is in that show. You know what I mean? Like, there's not a ton of light moments in that show, but it never really gets old. You're never like, oh, this show is so downbeat. Like, they still find a way to keep it fresh, even though it's almost all seems so negative. But, you know, I noticed, one interesting element to me in the show was when they sort of brought in the different trajectories with the Razor little mini movie half. I don't know if you saw that actually.
I haven't watched it yet. I'm actually glad that I haven't because it does give me a little bit more to watch. And I think there's some also webisodes and stuff like that that I can still sink my teeth around to.
Yeah, but I thought that was interesting, you know. And I thought that was another interesting thing about how they did the characters is like, it's not all good, bad. Like, you know, everyone says like, oh, well, it dealt with all these issues, but they don't put them all on one person. You know, they kind of spread it out. So you're not thinking like one guy's a bad guy, one guy's a good guy. You're really sort of, everyone is sort of multifaceted in a way. And I think that actually is what kind of made it more interesting is you kind of never knew who was going to be where, at least from season to season. And if you, I mean, anyone who saw the series will know, like, I don't think there's one character who you feel the same way about in the first season as you do in the last season.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that. I think two of my most interesting characters, not favorite characters, two of the characters that I'd always kind of, whenever I'd see them, I'd immediately kind of perk up and try to, you know, see what they're saying, figure out why they're saying it, were Gaius Baltar and Lieutenant Gata. They kind of take opposite trajectories in a way, but very believable ones at the same time, especially Gata.
He kind of becomes the conscience of the show after he gets injured, too, you know?
He probably gets put through the ringer the most and as far as not deserving. He just goes through all kinds of crap, and he never does a bad thing ever until he finally does, and that's kind of that. The show really got me emotionally attached to two characters who both are ambiguously kind of bad, and certainly with Gata at the end, certainly Baltar at the beginning. But that, you know, you definitely don't want to see anything bad happen to him. And in one of the last episodes, Lieutenant Gata is about to get executed for trying to, for basically successfully mutinying the Galactica, and, right. and he has a conversation with Baltar. And you know, they're just talking about Gata as a kid and nothing else. But I mean, he does a great job of conveying that he knows he's about to die. He knows this is his last time smoking a cigarette. This is his last time talking to somebody. And it was just very emotional and kind of moving at the same time.
No, it's true. And the thing about Baltar is I almost don't know how I feel about him still. I mean, I feel like his motivations were always the most murky of any character. And I don't ever think they gave a lot of insight. Like, I agree with you. Most selfish. And you think like, okay, well, who is this really for? But it's tough. I really like what they did with that character, because I feel like he was hard to get a handle on in a way. And I mean, sometimes that can be bad in the series, but in the context of this series where all the other characters, even if they changed, are pretty well defined, I felt like he was always the kind of guy you're always thinking from episode to episode, well, what's this guy going to do next?
Well, I think they commented on at least a couple times, maybe Lee and President Rosson, is that the at least with Gaius, you know that he's going to be self-serving and you know, he's going to want to do whatever he needs to do for him to stay alive.
Right.
I thought he had some of the most moving scenes. Before I get into those, he was also definitely the comedic actor. I mean, like, the person they would put in the most funny ha-ha situations.
For sure,
The two off the top of my head are when he's – at one point in the first season, he's like – he's starting to have sex with the Caprica six that's in his head.
And
Starbuck just walks in and he's just sitting there like humping in the air.
Sex. Yeah.
Yeah. It was fantastic. And then the second one was when he walks onto the hangar deck, when one of the versions of the six is there, and he's like, he goes in, he's like, oh, I haven't seen, I can't remember exactly what he says, but you know, he's like, oh yeah, you look great, you know, but your jacket should be unbuttoned. You should be showing a little bit more skin. And Adama, Admiral Adama, and Exo are like, Dr. Baltar, this is so and so. And then he's like, oh, you can see them or something like that. I don't know. It was just really funny. And yeah, but I mean, he also has some real serious stuff. Like when he ends up shooting, Crash something on Cabal. Yeah. That scene, I really think he's captured the most though, in the scene where he's being forced to sign
the execution
warrant, and you know, he's basically the Cylons are forcing him to sign the sheet of paper that allow them to go kill a bunch of the higher ups in the Resistance. You know, a bunch of his friends, and it, the actor does such a great job of you know, wanting to stay alive but not wanting to do this. And he's obviously, you know, I mean, he has nothing else. I mean, he has to do it. You know, he has to sign the paper, you know. Him being shot's not going to help anyone out. So, I mean, it's, you know, there's just great scenes like that that don't necessarily happen every episode, but enough that the series is really incredible.
Yeah, I mean, I could just recommend, if you like any of those, you know, quote-unquote smart TV shows – I think you'll like Battlestar Galactica. I mean, if you're not into sci-fi, it might take a little bit to get to it, but I mean, it really is, I thought, you know, spot on, bang on, and pretty good special effects too, I thought. I mean, I thought that it wasn't too cheesy at all. You know, they didn't overdo it at all on the outer space special effects six situation.
Going to your first point about the sci-fi, the best sci-fi shows are always the ones that are the most plausible. And that's certainly true here. They never do anything that you're just like, what? You know, no. Or, you know, it all is very real, very believable. So yeah, I mean, even if you don't necessarily like sci-fi, you should definitely give it a shot. But, the special effects are really amazing. They do a good job of either having something be, you know, CGI special effect or whatever or not. You know, ever looks really out of place, really odd, really wrong. Sometimes, you know, if there's the Centurion is like, you know, kind of walking around or something like that, that might look a little bad sometimes. One of my favorite things though was the start of season 3 when the Battlestar Galactica is coming down onto Caprica City.
Yeah,
it's just in a free fall, right, going right down to it, and it looked really legit and really sweet, and that was awesome. So yeah, mad props to whoever was in charge of all that stuff.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, there's no doubt about it that it was a good enough show that certain people from it are getting picked up to do other shows. Grace Park on Hawaii Five-0, and that's not a good show, But you know, it just shows the level. She went from nothing to being able to be on a primetime show on the most popular network just because of Battlestar Galactica.
Grace Park is interesting because she is obviously not a good actress.
No. She had a pretty compelling character that didn't require a lot of acting, if you know what I mean.
Well, she obviously had to do a lot of different things while still being relatively the same. So, I mean, you can't judge her too harshly. But whenever she would have to convey any major emotion, especially angry or you know, really depressedly sad or anything. Well, actually, that's not true. Angry. Whenever she had to get angry, it was always just terrible and wooden and awful.
Not terribly believable.
But like one of her big scenes in the first season is when she tries to kill herself, and that scene was awesome. When Baltar, who's always around people trying to kill themselves, is talking to her, and at this point he knows that she's the Cylon.
And
basically tells her to go kill herself.
Yeah.
Not so bluntly. And then she attempts to, and it's amazing. It's good. It's good.
There's a lot of intensity. That's all I have to tell you. There's a lot of intensity in this show. So if you're going to watch it, you know, really watch it. Don't go into it half-assed.
Now, I've got a question for both of you guys.
Bam.
Yet another highly regarded show from, I guess, the late 90s, early 2000s sci-fi show would be Joss Whedon's Firefly.
Yes.
It sounds like these two shows are completely different, or at least
I mean, the acting is way better in Battlestar Galactica than Firefly, but go ahead.
Mm-hmm. I was just wondering how, if and how those compare to each other.
Well, I'll let Jake give his own answer. I think, I mean, you know, I liked Firefly. I mean, obviously it didn't really get much of a chance. So, I mean, it's hard to judge it given that Battlestar Galactica got a long run and Firefly, I believe, only got, 18 episodes. So plus a movie. You know, I like that show. I think it's good. I thought the acting wasn't very good in that show. The story was interesting, but it wasn't super compelling. Like, it didn't really touch on broad issues in the same way. Like, it was more of a procedural, problematic type show. Battlestar Galactica is not a procedural at all. I mean, it's all long storylines, but I mean, I feel like Firefly, certainly you could sort of watch any episode and it really would, if you didn't know what happened before, it wouldn't really kill you. And I know that because I've actually randomly I've watched all the episodes in completely random order and it makes no difference. So, you know, it's not that I'm trying to hate on that, and I thought it was imaginative in a lot of ways. I thought, unlike a lot of other sci-fi movies, the shows, I mean the genre now, not the channel, the way they mix kind of high-tech and low-tech in Firefly is actually kind of cool, and I do like that. But I think comparatively from a storyline point of view, from an acting point of view, Battlestar Galactica is far superior.
I would completely agree. I haven't seen all the series yet. I've only seen a few episodes, and that was really only because I saw the movie with my sister, and I didn't want to go in completely clueless, and I've seen a few episodes since then also. But, yeah, what struck me, and Gene touched on this certainly, is everything's just so much more one-dimensional on Firefly. Yeah. It's all there, and, yeah, you can do whatever with it, and that'll be that. If you try to watch an episode of Battlestar Galactica, you will not know what's going on all the levels. You can certainly do it, and you can certainly watch it and enjoy an individual episode, but there's so much going on in the overlaying theme of the whole series that you'll miss, and that I would obviously not recommend you do that.
Fair enough. I mean, I think that's the only really real question I had. Clearly, I've been silent for this entire conversation because I have yet to watch any of Battlestar Galactica.
You gotta step your game up, son.
I guess so. I'm a busy bag. What can I say?
I guess I only really have a few other things that I want to mention or maybe talk about. The first being, I guess it's a little bit different. We'll start with this one. Is Leah Dama's courtroom speech at the end of season 3? I always thought Lee was a terrible actor, and I think he didn't do anything to necessarily just prove me on this. You know, I don't think he had, you know, he might not really had any chances to, but he certainly wasn't helping his own cause. And then he has this great monologue in the middle of the last episode in season 3. And when he's in the main part of the storyline, certainly his best storyline to me. But I was really stunned by that, and I was even more stunned to later find out that the dude playing him is British, and I definitely would have never guessed that. He actually has a pretty noticeable British accent. But yeah.
Yeah, no, I actually did not realize that guy was British until just now, so that actually changes my entire view of the Lee Adama character. I think he actually did more than I thought he
did. No, it definitely makes you give him a little bit more credit having to deal with a full accent change. Obviously, the Brits can do that a lot better going to American than vice versa.
And I feel like he actually kind of faded as a character as the seasons went on, too. Like, I thought he was going to be much more central, and then maybe they realized he couldn't really act that well and moved him to the margins. But I thought that was interesting. I actually kind of felt the same way about Starbuck, too. I mean, I know that obviously she was central to the end, but I felt like for a little bit there, she kind of fell off the map.
I think with both of them, especially, they're definitely victims of not necessarily being the main character. I mean, I think there was maybe one episode where Bill Adama wasn't in it for more than 5 minutes, you know, or President Roth.
Yeah.
You know, those two were always in every episode for a good bit, you know, and even the XO, I guess, to a certain point. Especially with Lee, I mean, his rise up through the ranks, so to speak, where he's getting, you know, moving up and getting more and more powerful positions. It definitely seemed like that was inverted to the amount of screen time he was getting. You know, the bigger roles he was starting to play in the fleet, the less screen time.
Which
was pretty funny. Now, Gene, I hated Starbuck. I couldn't stand her.
I thought she became a super superfluous character. I liked her in the first season. I mean, yeah, the first season. But I felt like at certain points they were actually just kind of making stuff up that was kind of ridiculous for her, just because they wanted her to be. I mean, in a way, she was almost like a Betty Draper type character. Like, they had wanted to put her in. You know, she had sort of the classic, you know, she's blonde, good, like that kind of thing going for her. You know, trying to attract, I think, more women viewers by having sort of like the tough woman thing. But I don't know. It didn't really work, and I thought that at some point they just started concocting stuff. And I think part of it
just to really hit home that she is a powerful woman and a huge badass. I fucking get it.
Yeah, and I think part of it too is that the original Battlestar Galactica was entirely centered really around Starbuck and Lee Adama. It's Face from the A Team, and then some other no name. So there you go. There's some quality moments in that Battlestar Galactica, but nevertheless, you know, I think they felt that they had to do something. They also had to try to stay at least partially true to the series by keeping her in there. But no, I didn't really like her, and I thought that she became kind of a pointless character at a certain point.
Yeah, I got two of my other big things before we get into one last thing, as far as I'm concerned, the least overlying kind of thing. Potential suicides. I guess these two were both in season four, so I guess season four really went batshit crazy with people committing suicide. The first being Callie finding out that the chief and that Sam, Saul, and the girl Tori were all Cylons, and she straight up grabs her 2-year-old kid and goes to an airlock and is about to commit suicide with her 2-year-old kid.
Yeah, I mean, she couldn't handle it. And I mean, in a way, like, how shocking is that? You know?
No, I mean, like, I didn't like Callie to begin with, so I really disliked her when she would not only take her own life, but you know, which I find a little bit more understandable. But why the hell are you taking your kid?
Yeah, no, I feel you.
What on earth are you thinking? I mean, obviously you're not. And she was really struggling those last few episodes too.
Oh, yeah.
She was really losing her shit. But then the one, the biggest emotional shock for me the entire series was Duala. That was just unreal.
I don't even know what to add to that. I mean, there's no doubt that that was. I mean, just like it threw you for a loop. I mean, that's for sure. You know, but they're good at that. They're good at that.
Yeah, very good. And then the last thing that I just want to kind of talk about a little bit is they pioneered cursing coming up with fracking.
I mean, and it worked so perfectly. I remember I first thought, like, okay, well, this is kind of stupid and just saying fracking. But then I realized, like, actually, this makes tons of sense, because it's actually I thought as the series started to wear on into like late first season, it made it better in a way, because they could express that kind
they
of
had that one word that they could add in, yeah, that gave them that little extra oomph. And I would completely agree with you. It really is amazing that they could do it, and that it would hit home so much, considering how ridiculous obviously it sounds. The thing that kind of pissed me off about it, it happened, I think, two things that kind of pissed me off about it. First one, a couple of times they would use it a lot during one speech or during one conversation.
Yeah.
And when they do that, it certainly loses its oomph, and you start noticing that they're saying frack and it sounds ridiculous and stupid.
Yeah, for sure.
So that really bothered me. And then the other thing that really bothered me, and Starbuck would always, I think, was the other person who would actually do this, is use frack in the sense of having sex. So she'd be like, man, I really want to frack right now, or let's go frack.
Yeah.
That sounds dirty and always makes me cringe. Like, I will never me cringe when you use frack in that sense.
Well, all I want to know is, to what degree is the fracking, how it was used in that, somehow related to hydraulic fracturing? I mean, obviously that makes a lot of sense, fracking, but I don't know. The way it's spelled, it just kind of makes me feel like the negativity of that word sort of seeped into the mass culture in a way.
Yeah, I guess so.
Maybe not.
I mean, it definitely brings up a whole host of questions. But
hard fracking, guys.
I mean that was just a cool. I mean, that was probably obviously something they didn't think would be. I mean, they're probably like, yeah, let's try it once or twice. You know, it'll probably it'll be really weird and no one will want to do it, or we'll get shit and we'll never do it again. But it obviously turned into something that, you know, turned into a lot more. And then the other thing that I liked that they did a lot, and that was kind of subtle like that, is whenever anyone would say the gods or, oh my gods, praise the gods, they would always add that S on. And that was always got a good smile out of that. Just one, you know, just little things in their universe that they're able to do.
And it was like,
too, but that's a little bit different.
Exactly. That's the thing, like, different enough that it is a different universe, but like close enough that you really understand what's, I don't know, it was nice. It was subtle but effective.
Yeah, totally. Gene, do you have anything else?
No, I'm good, gents. I'm going to let you do a little community, a little awake, and I'm going to bow out.
All right, Eugene, it's always a pleasure to have you on the podcast. Hopefully we can make this a little bit more of a regular thing like we had planned in the first place and we actually started.
That's true. Well, all I can say is in-the-bag2gs.com. Get it that. Holla at us on Twitter and Facebook.
Excellent. All right, Eugene.
Indeed.
And just one last little quick plug for Battlestar Galactica. If you have Netflix, give the miniseries a chance and watch the first episode. Because if watching the miniseries alone should get you invested. If not, watch the first one. Some shit goes down in it, so you'll get hooked immediately, I promise.
And if you don't like it, after that, don't ever listen to this podcast again because you suck.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Jake.
Yes.
I've been wanting to talk about a couple of NBC shows for a while now.
Indeed.
Mainly Community, which, like you, I basically caught up with where we are currently in about a week or so.
Mm.
And Awake, both Thursday night NBC shows. First, let's go with Community, the comedy. I always thought it seemed, when I saw the promos and stuff, I don't, maybe this is NBC's shortcoming, not quite sure. It always just seemed a little too stupid for me to enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the strength of Community is the fact that the characters are so well drawn out, but are still willing to change as well. They're not trying to keep them. They're not trying to keep them the same. They're allowing them to evolve somewhat. I mean, clearly you are who you are,
mm-hmm.
but they're not trying to shoehorn the same guys in at us every time.
Well, and the great thing about that is they start calling out each other on when they're doing something that's typical to their character. Like, you know, they start being like, oh, here comes another Jeff speech, or Brett is going to be angry about this. You know, they started doing that a lot, and then making fun of that, you know, lets you oversee that a lot more.
Exactly. And I mean, the characters, even if you don't like some characters, I mean, I'd have to say I'm not really big into Shirley. She's not.
I mean, I don't think anyone really likes Shirley or Britta, right? I mean, no one could actually like Shirley or Britta.
Yeah, and I mean Chevy Chase's character as well is
Is
well, not very likable.
Yeah,
but for some odd reason, you still are invested in all of them.
Yeah.
And I think that's really a testament to the show. And I think that's why it really needs to be watched. I'm not quite sure there is a show on, at least a comedy show on at the moment, that has such well-defined characters that are allowed to evolve. And I mean, even though the situations can be rather sitcom-y, it's more tongue-in-cheek. You know, they know that they're doing it. And I mean, the fact that Abed is in fact Mr. Postmodern. You know, TV geek, and calls everyone out on exactly what's going on and gives like 7 million analogies. Like, basically, what Family Guy does sometimes, except not actually showing it, just Abed calling it out, I think is really one of my favorite parts of the show.
Oh yeah, no, definitely them willing to make fun of what they're doing, certainly sticks out and stands out. And like I said, it lets them kind of get away with it a little bit more. You know, if they were just doing all these stereotypical things, it would just be a stereotypical show. But with them realizing it and knowing it, it makes it something a little bit different. The first two seasons really are amazing. They are unbelievably mm-hmm. good and funny. This third season's been a little bit dicier, at least as far as I'm concerned. I haven't enjoyed it quite as much. I think they've been a little too into their, you know, they love doing these theme episodes.
Yeah.
They've been really obsessed with doing that recently, which I haven't been a huge fan of.
Well, in the first two seasons, they had the theme episodes, but they were more just general sort of genre themes. Mm-hmm. Whereas this season, they've really specifically targeted some spoof type material, like they had the whole Ken Burns spoof
documentary, the Law and Order episode. Yeah, I mean those were the past two episodes. And I think during the other seasons they wouldn't do that. I don't think they would ever go back to back with like spoofing stuff like that.
Yeah, I would agree. And I mean, just the fact that it's a clear spoof as opposed to just working within sort of genre constraints. That mm-hmm. I think they seem to be leaning a little heavily on this year. But I'd agree with you that the first two seasons were better than this third season. But I still think the third season has been quite good. And I don't know. It's kind of a refreshing show. It's kind of it has gotten this comparison by a few. It's kind of Simpson-y in the fact that like they just have jokes and jokes and like you know it's just like. 5 seconds.
Constant.
Yeah. It's a constant barrage of jokes, and, you know, some are going to resonate and some aren't, not you know, depending on the type of viewer. But it's also nice that it's not a procedural type show where each episode doesn't build towards something. I mean, it's not like the overarching plot lines are, you know, it's not like a Mad Men type of thing where the overarching plot line is where you're building towards. But right. It's nice to actually have something.
It does help to watch the series in order. You know, you can't just completely watch random shit.
Exactly. So I think that's another thing that helps me. It's the overarching plot lines definitely help me like the show more. I know you have been a fan since. It first came out, correct? Or at least
more or less. I definitely did not watch it immediately. I don't think. Actually, I take that back. I watched the first episode, I remember. And then I think I took a few weeks off for something thereabouts, and then kind of got back up into it. Certainly before the end of the season. I know what it was that got me back going into it. Halfway through the first season, there's a Jack Black episode, and I remember as soon as they started talking about that I was like, oh, I got to get back on the show, mm-hmm. start watching again. So I caught back up at that point and watched it. I've been watching it ever since that one. And that episode also has Annie and Britta. Open heads. Oh yeah, they have that. They have a. I don't remember what it was. Jack Black has a dream of them, in like cheerleading outfits, mm-hmm. fighting in like a hot tub or something like that.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna keep watching the show.
Yeah. No, I would hope so. I mean, you've watched ever since. Are you one of these people that is real worried that it doesn't get renewed? Are you kind of like living
I was, but like I said, these past ever since it's come back, it really hasn't been great. For me, they're missing Ken Jeong. Ken Jeong needs to come back in a major way.
They need some more Senor Chang.
I cannot get enough Senor Chang. And obviously he plays a pretty vital role in the first season. I mean, he's pretty much one of the main characters since he's
second
in
season as well. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so this third season where he's only appearing maybe a little bit here and there has been a little bit different. It hasn't been quite as crazy with Senor Chang around. Senior Chang and his undies oiling himself up to go running into event.
I mean, that's another great thing that the show did in the first two seasons, at least, is that they used the right amounts of the characters. Because clearly, if you have too much of any of these characters, they're going to become grating and annoying.
Right.
But
right.
they really weaved the characters and the amount of time that they were in the show very well, so that they were still lovable by the end. It wasn't too much of any one character. And I mean, Ken Jeong's character is a lot like that. I mean, if you had a 30-minute episode or a 22-minute episode where Ken Jeong is in it 18 minutes, you would probably be shitting your pants because it would just be too annoying.
But your head might explode.
Exactly, but because they insert the characters at just the right time for just the correct amount of time, I think that's another strength of the show.
Definitely.
But yeah, I mean, definitely watch it. I think, I mean, the third season's still been good.
It has been great.
But it's not. It's still been good. So definitely watch it. Hopefully, it'll get picked up again, and we'll see. I'm thinking that most of these spoofs are kind of like bucket list items where the creator and the writers are like, we've always wanted to do these, so we better throw them all in just in case we don't get renewed. Is what I'm thinking.
Hopefully, yeah.
So, I don't know. But yeah, hopefully it gets renewed. Another NBC show later, the drama on Thursday night, that we have been in on since day one, at least watching, would be Awake, the mid-season premiere.
Yeah.
You've talked a little bit about Awake in some of your TV recaps.
Mm-hmm.
How are you feeling about this show right now?
I like it. I like it a lot. But as we've kind of been touching on, it's been very procedural.
Yeah.
And what's so aggravating about it, I guess, is that it's so obvious that it shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. How are they not making any progress in this what the hell is going on storyline?
Well, I mean, not only that, but it's also – it feels like they're purposely doing it because they kind of – they don't know, but they suspect that once we find out maybe what exactly – I mean, there's basically two overarching storylines here. The one main one is, you know, which world is the real world?
Right.
Which world is Jason Isaacs –
Actually,
and which one is the dream world? And so, you know, that's the main plot line. But then there's this other conspiracy plot line that has been brought up a couple times, you know, just inserted. It hasn't really – there was one episode where it kind of became a main plot where I believe he was investigating, like, one of the past crimes.
The shady corporation front, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But other than that, it's just kind of like a blow-past mention every once in a while. And so I'm kind of thinking that it's so procedural, especially at the beginning, because they are worried that once we do find out which world is the real world, people will stop watching.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see if they try to wrap it up at all or not. So, wait, Bags, you don't think that those are the one and the same storylines? You don't think that those are similar storylines?
I mean, at the moment, I would call them separate. I mean, I'm sure they'll be connected. It's not like they're we haven't gotten enough from this conspiracy storyline to really tell what it is. I know the last, I think two episodes ago, maybe the hospital one, I'm not quite sure, the one where he sees the penguin.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they mentioned something in that one where it kind of pointed to, like, creating, you creating this world to try to help you figure out which world is the real one. And so I feel as though this conspiracy plot line is sort of like kind of his dream world trying to tell him that it's a dream, you know?
Right.
But, I mean, I'm not quite sure, entirely sure on that, because especially since we haven't gotten any sort of motivation as to why they would want to do that. I mean,
not at all. We haven't gotten like a sniff.
Exactly. So far, all we've gotten is Jason Isaacs was a fairly good dad. He was a good detective. And he hasn't been controversial at all.
Right. No, he hasn't been.
If they want us to believe in this controversy storyline here, conspiracy storyline, they're going to have to give us at least either Jason Isaacs being a dick or something, you know, doing something along those lines, or they're going to have to give us a little backstory as to how this is plausible. Otherwise, right. I'm just going to assume that that is the dream world, the one where his wife is still alive.
I hope that's the dream world, because I'd like to see that one end as quickly as possible. I think the show, even in its proceduralness, is best when they are not in that world.
Yeah, I mean, the wife
is terrible.
In particular, is an awful actress.
And plus, that would obviously pave the way for the tennis instructor, who I cannot get enough of.
Yeah, she is quite a hottie. But yeah, no, the procedural, just to mention one last thing, the procedural thing is definitely kind of disappointing, because it seems like, you know, they built this up to be like, you know, we're going to figure out which one is which and whatever. And I'm sure there are clues within each episode to help us figure it out, but until we get something more concrete in the overall overarching plot line, it just seems basically like your typical cop show where he's alive and where he has two different worlds instead of.
It would have been nice if we made a baby step every other episode. You know, we don't need anything huge. You know, Lost didn't make leaps every episode or anything like that, but it'll help us out a little bit.
Yeah.
Give us a little something. Batman, the thing that I'm going to spoil for you and any listeners right now are in the last episode, I guess this is if you haven't read my TV recap yet also, is Rex's girlfriend, the hottie, broke up with him.
Uh-oh.
Because she was pregnant.
Uh-oh, mad preggers.
But she miscarried. And the theme of that episode had been this there was a bowl game, and in one world the last second field goal went, you know, just inches in, the other world it went inches out. So that really got, you know, Jason Isaacs thinking about, you know, just the little small things that are different in each world. So then he was like, oh shit, I better go talk to Rex's girlfriend in the world where Rex is dead. She has not miscarried yet, so they have not moved to Oregon yet.
Oh, so, but it's still Rex's baby.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh, delicious.
Yeah, so that's what we got going on next episode, at least, is him with his, we saw him about to tell his wife what was going on, but we didn't see what her reaction was. They were, I mean, all there, she was pretty much packed up, and they were about to move, so we'll see what goes on there.
Well, I mean, I thought it would have been very interesting, I believe.
If they did make the move?
Yeah, because in one of those shrink sessions, it was like, there's no way you'll be able to keep both worlds going, because
yeah,
it'd be so different.
Something's going to give, yeah.
But now it seems like they're kind of copping out so that they can keep it going, unfortunately. But I don't know. I suppose we'll see what happens. Which world do you think is the real world? Because I believe Ryan Killen, I think that's his name, has said that he's not just dreaming both worlds. Like, he's not in, like, a coma or anything.
Right.
He said that one of the worlds is the real world and the other one is not. So,
God, I hope it's the one with Rex. God, let it be the one with Rex. So, that's the green world, right?
That's the blue-green world, and then the other one is red-yellow.
That one seems more real to me. When referring to the filters, that red filter looks so dreamy to me. I have no reasoning for backing up that claim. Only that I'd rather Rex be alive than his wife.
Fair enough. I think for the most part, I mean, we've already touched on how bad the wife is.
Yeah.
But I'd say all the other ancillary, secondary characters are acted fairly well in the show as well, especially his two partners.
I cannot get enough of Valderrama. He's actually good.
Yeah.
Like, obviously they don't have him do anything, and he has very little screen time, but with what he's given, he does a very fine job.
It is nice. I really like the Bunk-esque partner in the Blue World, in the Live World as well.
You just keep making him as close to Bunk as possible, and there's really no way to hate on him.
Exactly. So I really like that guy. I've seen him in other things too, so it's not like he's new.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I'm about to reach the point where it's going to be frustrating that they don't really address or at least make a little step towards us trying to figure out the world, or at least the conspiracy.
Right.
So, I mean, I want to like the show, and I mean, for the most part, I kind of do, but if they don't start really chipping away at the overarching storyline, I might lose some interest.
No, definitely. We only have two or three episodes left.
Yeah, I think that sounds about right.
They need to get on their horse. I'll probably keep watching it anyway, because even if it stays just procedural, I still enjoy it a lot. I just enjoy Jason Isaacs a lot, I guess.
I mean, it's a really well done show. I mean, the fact that they can have these two worlds, and I mean, aside from the fact that there's always some clue in one world and then that helps them solve the case in the other, which I mean, I suppose makes sense if one world's a dream world and one's not or whatever.
Right.
But you know, that can be a little campy almost, you know.
No, definitely.
Each episode kind of revolves around that.
That's their only plot thing. They need to stop doing that.
Yeah, I mean, it would be fine if every once in a while it happened, because you know that's kind of how it works.
Yeah, just slow it down a little bit. Yeah, we don't need it to happen five times in every episode.
Yeah, exactly. But other than that, I feel like the show is pretty solid. So I'm hoping that. I mean, I don't know what the ratings have been. I'm assuming they've been decent, but I'm hoping that the second season. I'm assuming that if they get renewed for a second season, you know, everything will be a little bit more planned out, a little bit tighter. You know, whereas the first season is really, you make a pilot, and then if that gets picked up, you make a few shows, and you just hope people watch. So hopefully, right. If there is a second season, it'll be a little bit more plotted out.
Yeah. No. Definitely.
But yeah, I think unless you have anything else you would like to talk about.
No, I think that covers it for these two megapods.
Excellent. Before we go, the movie blockbuster season starts.
Avengers comes out on Friday, yeah.
Yeah, so what are you going to do? Are you going to go this weekend? Are you going
to
wait?
Super excited. Yeah, no, I think I'll probably try to go on Sunday. Maybe a matinee on Sunday or Monday would be my best guess. Whichever day is shittier, weather-wise.
Okay. Hopefully the website, hopefully we'll be able to just blow it out sometime next week with some reviews. I'm pretty sure that we're going to have a live, almost live updates. We've got Jay Krengel and Alan in L.A. who are going to be attending a Marvel movie marathon.
Oh, man.
Yeah, where I believe all Marvel movies, not X-Men, Spider-Man, or Hulk, they're not playing any of the Hulks, but, you know, Iron Man, Thor, Captain America, will be played back-to-back-to-back leading up to the Avengers. So hopefully we'll get a few updates here and then from them.
Is that what it is, the two Iron Men, Thor and Captain America? Is that it? Yeah, that's it, right?
I guess it's got to be, right?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, so, and then, of course, that all leads into the midnight premiere of Avengers. So hopefully we'll be able to get those guys to live blog that and then come out with a review on Friday of the movie. And then we might end up having an Avengers podcast or, you know, other reviews. We might end up doing a little, have the staff come in and, you know, everyone writes a nice little two-paragraph impressions thing. I don't know what's going on, but expect a lot of Avengers coverage coming up soon.
Church.
Definitely come by the website in-the-bagwith2gs.com.
for more podcasts, more sports, movies, TVs coverage. And, yeah, we'll talk to you guys later.
Peace.